Did she say yes?
Yes.
You're ready to go. Okay. Thank you. Good evening. I'm happy to open this evening's meeting of the Burwood Local Planning Panel for 25th of January 2025. Welcome to this meeting, members of the public, members of the panel, and attending staff. The Burwood Council acknowledges the Wangal peoples who are the traditional custodians of the area. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. Can I introduce the panel members, please? I'll ask them to briefly summarise their career so that people attending are aware of the expertise being brought to bear. First, can I announce Annette Rohodes? Annette.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Annette Rohodes. I have expertise in engineering and also economic, social and community development.
And can I introduce Lisa Truman?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Lisa Truman. I'm a heritage consultant and I have a background in local government and in the private sector. Most of my work is done in the Land and Environment Court and doing strategic studies for local councils.
Thank you very much. And lastly, Tom Morgan.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. So I'm the community representative. I've lived in the Burwood area for approximately 15 years and work in communications and public affairs and hold an MBA.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Hoffman. I've been appointed chair for this panel tonight. My experience is as a commissioner of the Land and Environment Court of New South Wales over a period of 14 years and also as a director of a consulting company in architecture, town planning and landscape architecture for a period of 8 years and prior to that, chief town planner for the Central Coast region of New South Wales. Since leaving the court, I've been a member or chair of a number of local planning panels similar to this one. Moving on now to the recording of the meeting, members of the public are advised the meetings of the panel are audio recorded for the purposes of assisting with the preparation of minutes and the recording of the public part of the meeting. And it will be published on Council's website. The panel has undertaken site investigations and we have before us reports provided by the Burwood Council officers and the applicants on the matters for consideration. The panel will make determination on the matters before it. Each determination will include reasons for the determination and all such details will be included in the official record of the meeting. I might also note that the panel will take note of submissions made to it by representatives of the objectors and representatives of the applicant. And the panel will ask questions most likely during the course of that discussion. And once we've heard that portion, we will adjourn each particular matter to a private session, which we will hold after the closure of the public component. Now, I need to call for any apologies or leave of absences. I don't believe there are any. Thank you. So I'll pass on to the declaration of interest by panel members. Each panel member has had to furnish a statement of no conflict of interest with any matters before it at this meeting. Can I ask if all panel members have done that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, all panel members, including myself, have done so. So I can introduce the agenda items now. Now, in discussion before the meeting, we have three items before us. The first one is a rather extensive planning proposal for Parramatta Road and Cheltenham Road, Croydon. We believe that that will occupy the most time at this meeting tonight, and the two other matters will be shorter. One is a discussion at Burwood Road, 60 Burwood Road, Burwood, and the other one is a section 4.56 modification of an approved development on Liverpool Road. There are no people wanting to be heard in regard to that last item I mentioned. And I believe that we can pass that matter in for determination by the panel in its private session and therefore not take up time in the public hearing. In regard to the other matter, 60 Burwood Road, Burwood, I do have persons wanting to be heard on that one. And there are three. I've got Musa Zayour, Michael A, and Sam. Do we have any of those people present at the moment? We don't?
Yes, I'm here.
We have somebody on. Where are they? I can't see them on screen.
Hello, is that speaking?
But we can't see them on screen. What, on the one behind?
That's no, over there. It says Sam in the corner.
We asked them to switch the camera on.
Oh, is that Sam there?
Yes.
With no picture. All right. Sam, are you present?
Yes, hi. I'm present. It's just that my
can you turn that up? We can't hear.
Hello? Can you hear me? Hello. Hello.
Well, no, but we're going to make him known to be here.
Hello. Hello.
Yes. Sam, you don't have a last name?
Yes, my last name is Al, A-U, Sam A-U.
Thank you. How do you spell that, please?
A-U. Just A-U, A-U, like for Australia, but without just the two first alphabets.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yes.
And you're only attending. You don't wish to make any comments?
No, we will have our engineer attending close to the 6:15. He should be joining us in a very short period of time.
Okay, you're only attending for information. I have another name here, Michael A. Are you attending via the online link?
Sorry, Michael is also from our company, so I believe he's only also attending for information, but he might interject if there are some critical issues that are being discussed.
Is that you, Sam, saying that?
Yes, that's me, Sam.
So we don't have Michael A, do we?
Not as yet. He might join us because we were told our agenda is going to start at 6:15.
Right. And how about Musa Zayour?
Likewise, he should be joining us in 3 minutes' time.
All right. I'm just thinking the representatives of the planning proposal, I take it you are the three gentlemen at the back of the room. We'll just take your presence acknowledgement and see if we can deal with this other matter more quickly. Do we have Stephen Gouge? Thank you. And do we have Andrew Cutter?
Yes.
And we have Farhad Haidari. Thank you. And then Rhys Mackie.
He's online.
Is he?
Yes, I'm online.
Is he?
Yes, I'm here.
Look, those three gentlemen at the rear, if you'd like to come and join the table at the front here, it'll facilitate hearing you and recording you. So we'll get that in place now.
Thank you.
Can I ask the technicians if we have Michael A or Musa Zayu yet? We don't. All right. Well, rather than take up time without anything happening, can I ask the council officer in regard to the planning proposal for 166 to 204 Parramatta Road and 1 to 1A Cheltenham Road, Croydon, to introduce that application while we're waiting for the other people to join on the other matter? Yes, go. Introduce yourself, officer, and then please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, everyone. My name is Netta. I'm the executive urban designer at Berwick.
Can you speak closer to the microphone, please?
Sure.
Move it close to yourself.
Can everyone hear me? Perfect.
Thank you.
My name is Netta. I'm the executive urban designer at Berwick Council. So the planning proposal for Parramatta Road 166 to 204-121A Cheltenham Road is for a rezoning of the site from E3 to MU1 mixed-use development with a maximum height of 72.5 metres and maximum FSR of 3.421. The planning proposal includes a mix of non-residential development, including retail and commercial development along four-storey podium, and two residential and hotel towers from 14 to 22 stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have either of those two fellows for the other matter yet? We don't. All right, they may have to just wait until we've finished this item then.
We are happy to wait a couple of minutes if that...
I beg your pardon?
We're happy to wait a couple of minutes if that...
All right, you need to use the microphone.
Just going to say we're happy to wait a few minutes if that facilitates getting this item out of the way.
Okay, all right. Officer, will you let us know as soon as they're available? Have you been able to call them at all?
Hi, sorry, it's Sam again. I just spoke to our engineer and he told us he's on his way to the office to attend this meeting via Zoom. His schedule has been a mess because of the time changes. But he'll be attending in 10 minutes.
Okay, so he's on his way.
Yes.
What about Musa Zayul?
Sorry, that was Musa. That was our acoustic engineer.
All right. Look, I think they might just have to wait until we're finished with this, the item.
Yeah, I understand.
On Parramatta Road.
Sure.
Okay. Now, as you've heard, the panel's visited the site today, and I believe we've all read the extensive reports that you've provided. And we're anxious to hear your presentation. One question that I have that I'd like you to address is the basic hierarchy of how your proposal sits in regard to the Kings Bay precinct. As a town planner myself, I usually start on the wider context in order to understand the setting and the implications for a proposal in a particular location. And I come down through knowing that background to what the proposal is. As you know, we're dealing with a matter that requires rezoning, and this site is part of the Kings Bay precinct, which is one of the nominated locations along Parramatta Road for, if you like, an urban centre. Now, I haven't found any detailed assessments in your reports about what's intended for the Kings Bay precinct. I understand that master plans for it are only currently on display, but I assume that you did some research in regard to that, and it would help me understand where your proposal sits, because if you look just at the physical plan, your site is at the fringe of the Kings Bay precinct. So one would think it is separated from what you might call the core of the Kings Bay precinct, certainly by distance and being on the southern side of Parramatta Road versus the north side where the majority of Kings Bay is. Could you first of all give us some context in regard to your investigations on that particular matter? Who would like to speak first?
I'm happy to talk to that.
You might introduce yourself when you speak.
Thank you, panel. My name's Stephen Gouge. I'm a town planner at Ethos Urban, and we prepared the planning proposal documents. I might just start by saying we do have a presentation. It'd be great to be able to run through that. I've got the others here as well. In response to your question, as the panel would have seen, there's been a reasonably long road in this application from initial community consultation and engagement to lodgement, as well as some progression of the varying planning framework and strategic planning context, as well as infrastructure announcements from the government through that process. So in answer to your question, I'll answer part of it, and perhaps Farhad from Architectus will answer the second part. In relation to the strategic planning context, when the Parramatta Road Corridor Strategy was established, you know, give or take in 2016, 2017, at the time there was no earmarked metro that was identified for that precinct. And where there was a suggestion that that could occur, part of that suggestion was potentially within the Kings Bay precinct, but nothing was set at that time. Since the endorsement or essential incorporation of that plan as a strategy, there has been the announcement of the Metro West station. At the point of that announcement, there was subsequently no revision or reconsideration of the PR cuts itself. But there was a recognition by the state government for a consideration of how rezonings would progress in the precinct, both in light of other changes and other transport infrastructure in addition to the metro, as well as a recognition of potential changes nearby to the metro. So if you like, the context changed from 2016 through to the announcement of the metro. One of the other elements, I think, which is also self-evident, is at the time that this application was lodged and the initial discussions, Burwood North as a strategy and certainly as an evolution of that as a master plan hadn't yet progressed and wasn't known to the public. So in a sense of a strategy of hierarchy and centres, it was an immediate consideration at the outset as being part of the strategic plans. But there was also recognised at the same time that the context of when those plans were done to what had happened more recently with the announcement of the Metro had started to change a little bit as well. And probably the last part, which goes to that, which we'll talk to a little bit later, is the opportunities or the potential in terms of the built form and what that could deliver on the site, as well as the community outcomes, the public access outcomes, the need for open space, that also then informed that consideration of the hierarchy. And probably the last two things that I'll say before I pass over to Farhad is as part of the assessment with the design review panel, and I was just checking the documents, whether or not an additional response, I think it's referenced in the chronology, but an additional response for that strategic context was provided to council in response to the evolution of Burwood North and the progression of that during our assessment. And what that also looked at is approaches whereby centres per se were not necessarily the only approach, and a corridor similar to perhaps a St Leonard's or Crow's Nest or some other areas where consistency of density along an identified corridor within areas of identified infrastructure is an approach that can allow for the balancing of growth and change and meeting the services and the needs without extending that impact to be a much broader area outside of that footprint. So we've seen challenges across Sydney of that occurring even in Burwood Council. So that's probably my comments from a planning standpoint, but certainly from the design, I'll pass over to Farhad.
Thank you. Farhad Haidari, I'm an architect at Architectus and been there from the very beginning of this project assisting. The starting point, I guess, after the planning advice that we had received, did a full analysis of the whole corridor, as Stephen mentioned, and really looking at Kings Bay north and south of Parramatta Road, all the way to the metro station box as well on both sides of the street. So doing a full analysis of, in terms of what is there at the moment, what are the different chronic propositions that we've seen in the past and what might be coming to the future. And one thing that came out of that analysis was looking at the location of the site itself and the opportunities that that provided, and that was quite a significant 10,000 plus square meter site along the south side, and more keeping with opportunities along the southern side of Parramatta Road leading up to Burwood Road and Metro Station, whereas the sites that are within the Kings Bay Centre along the southern side of Parramatta Road are relatively shallow of nature. So by default, when you look at that map, it to Stephen's point, it is more looking at that corridor, and it, in a way, it leads itself to an evolution or down the track evolution along Parramatta Road as a corridor closer to connection to Burwood as an opportunity. In terms of Kings Bay, in terms of build form and hierarchy, to Stephen's point, we looked at a number of other centres in terms of understanding as benchmarks and as precedents to be able to be informed by it. And I was looking at areas where there's significant public transport and potential for urban regeneration. They're all in the appendix, correct? Yes. Yep, so all of those analyses that we've prepared have been included in the design report in the appendix that's been submitted.
Yeah. So can I ask, have you had the opportunity to see the current Kings Bay concept plan? Have you got any comments to make?
In terms of comments, look, we've seen the Kings Bay, we've seen Parramatta Road North. A lot of the more recent plans that have come forth, as standalone centres, I don't think I have any commentary on that other than they serve a purpose for within that centre. Where we're located in between the two, the Metro and the Kings Bay Corridor Centre or the core, it is an opportunity to be able to create a vision or a development that can tie to both east and west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Any other members? Mr. Cutter, is it?
Andrew Cutter from LSH. So I work for the owner of the property.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mr. Hoffman and panel, for your time tonight. One of the considerations as well with regards to this is the proximity to the metro station, which is walkability, whereas Kings Bay it's a wonderful development. However, it's certainly well further away from any public transport. You know, when we're trying to get a city that is a walkable city, public transport is one of the most important. So that was one of our key drivers as well with regards to the site. So if I can just take a couple of minutes, I would like to take this opportunity to talk about how we got to where we were, which also gives you a bit of background on that consideration. So we're not a typical developer. I mean, you've probably heard this many times, but we don't want to build big, ugly buildings, sell them, and then move on. That's not LSH. So LSH is a family company, and we own the buildings and hold on to them for long term. So that's a very different sort of proposal rather than what you typically get, which is a make money and move on. So we actually care about what this is supposed to look like. We did have a DA for a car showroom there. That did not proceed through no fault of our own. We looked at it and we could have absolutely put up just a big box retail. We could have put a big blue IKEA box on there, for example. But that's not what LSH is about. If you look at one of our buildings in Brisbane, for example, you know, it is one of the best buildings in Brisbane. Design excellence is really important for us. So what we did is we actually had quite a long journey. We started this 4 years ago. And as Stephen said, we lodged this with council more than 2 years ago now. We did a lot of analysis, and our analysis started with placemaking. It then started with the demand drivers. We did a detailed analysis all the way down to what restaurants are working, for example, for the ground plane, who goes there, how long is the dwell time, all that sort of stuff. So we did it with a huge amount of better detail and effort. And from the placemaking, then we actually saw, and the demand, we saw what the opportunities were. We didn't just think, oh, we need a big, large building. When we conducted our sessions with the residents as well, which is now over, well over a year ago, there was really good reaction. We got a lot of reaction from them saying, fantastic, this is great. We've got employment for our children. We've got an amazing space of green space, which there is no green space in Burwood that's publicly accessible. Of course, with concerns that were well noted as well. So for us, I guess, to sit here tonight, and which we've been asking for a long time, more than 2 years after lodgement, I know council have been very busy on a lot of things that were forced upon them. So that's not a criticism, but it's incredibly frustrating for us, having worked through with council for 2 years now through a number of different planning teams, and on Thursday evening to see a recommendation from council of 10 to 12 stories that doesn't align with PR cuts, but has never been discussed with us in the past. We were actually encouraged throughout this process to continue to develop what we have presented now. In fact, even through the design review panel, we removed a number of terrace houses and we put them on top because the design review panel said, make it taller, make it skinnier. So we've made a number of these things. We knew height was always a concern, but we wanted to make sure as well that we didn't overshadow the reserves, any of the heritage housing, all of that sort of stuff. So for us, I guess, I'll also look at the current proposal of the 10 to 12 stories the council are recommending. I think that'll deliver a very poor outcome. And why I say it'll deliver a poor outcome is, one, I don't think it'll be commercially feasible, but two, it'll just be big boxes of residential, which you get everywhere. What we're planning is something very, very different to what you see in many, many developments with the community, the open space. So I think it's, for us, it's, we've, I feel it's a little bit unfair, to be honest, to be sitting here 2 years when nothing's really happened and all of a sudden we get to this stage, but I guess it's our turn to put forward. at the end of the day, I guess we're offering a very unique chance to rejuvenate Parramatta Road. It's the largest infrastructure project in Australia at the moment, which is the Metro Tunnel. And we have to, as a country as well, leverage off these things. Sydney has a major issue with regards to apartments and living, etc. Here is a site that can be delivered straight away. It exists. There's no amalgamation of sites, all of that sort of stuff as well. And it's got amazing space that will offer employment, amenity and so forth. I think this really has an opportunity to set the future tone for what that whole area will end up being. I do know the site directly opposite us. I know the developer. They're already in discussions with Canada Bay, and their FSR is bigger than ours. So those things are happening, even though it doesn't fit in with Air Canada Bay as well. So that person has a very large land holding opposite. So I guess for me, Parramatta Road is described by the Committee of Sydney, who you'd be very familiar with, as the sewer of the West. And to be honest, it really is. It's a major arterial road. It's really a difficult space. But really, I mean, the mayor of Burwood as well wants to improve Parramatta Road, and all the other panels and anybody who's looked at Parramatta Road want to improve it. Really, for us, we think that building something like this will actually set the benchmark that everybody else then has to follow to really create a beautiful change for Parramatta Road. Because if someone doesn't do it, Parramatta Road will stay the same or will become like a lot of other precincts, especially in Melbourne, that are just shop-top housing and, you know, there's no amenity for people. So for me, I really think that really good change, which is what's happening at the moment in Sydney and certainly happening in this area, only comes when visionary, courageous, sensible decisions are made. And we really want this to be a place for people to live and not just exist. So that's, I guess, our thinking behind it as well. Placemaking was our biggest thing on this to make sure that people are happy. If people are happy, that makes our development successful, and obviously it adds value to us as well. So, thank you.
So the key to your concept is lifestyle, that you're not producing just a big box block of apartments. You're actually producing a quality residential area or locality.
Correct. Yes, mm-hmm. And certainly with the open space and the amenities that are available there, mm-hmm. is what we want to do. We want a nice place for people to live.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very easy for us as a developer. If I had shareholders, I would be building something very different there. But my shareholders are a family company, and they want to build. You know, they want to build legacy projects, which is what they do in a number of different places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To what extent did you consider, first of all, the existing residential to the south of the property, mm-hmm. and then also the, as we understand it, the likely zoning for that area is probably to go to 5 or 6 storey type residential.
Yes.
What consideration did you give to those sort of aspects?
I can talk about design, but you can perhaps talk about the central spine.
I might talk to that as well. And I think just to go back one step earlier, when Andrew and his team came to us with a brief, it was unlike what we normally see in that from a development team point of view, having a visionary kind of approach and to have a look at, I guess, the body of work that they've delivered in the past. It has been that. They haven't done that many developments. What they've done has been about placemaking, as you mentioned it. And with that came, and I've got a very brief note, just as a key client vision, a mixed-use development that places greenery at site, combining all the elements that make a world-class Sydney neighbourhood within a single precinct. So that was a lot to absorb, and how do you take that and turn that into, and given the site, given the constraints, and given the opportunities, how do you turn that into something positive and stay true to that vision and make sure you get a great outcome? Starting point of that was an analysis of the site, including those adjacent neighbouring properties to the south and the block along the back, which is likely to go out to 4, 5, 6 storey developments into the future. Having had a site that is 85 by 125 metres in dimension, 85 metres deep, over 10,000 square metres, the opportunity, there's an opportunity to master plan that in a way where you are reducing the or minimizing the impact to the neighbors to the south. But the starting point of that was, let's look at the impact to the neighbors from the very beginning, when there are single story houses or terraces as they are at the moment. With that analysis on the existing development, we looked at the solar access to them, looked at the proximity of where they are to the boundary, where their windows are, their open spaces, a full analysis of those properties to the south in the current state as it is. As part of our urban design approach to the site, we had, I'll just name, I guess, six key drivers or six key principles that underpin the development. And that was informed, but not trying to design for the vision that we were given, but then also make sure that it fits well within the place, because the outcome that LSH are looking after is that, you know, deliver for the community. We're in it for the long run. We want to make sure that it flourishes to become something greater than what is there at the moment. So the six key urban design principles that underpinned the development was, given the depth and the size of the block, was a central open space, which is a new destination for Croydon, looking at mapping out all the open spaces within the locality, immediate locality, being a shortfall, creating an open space with a size and quality that can only be offered with a site of this size and depth. Next thing was in looking around the perimeter, A, on Parramatta Road, and then also on Lucas and Cheltenham Road, greening around the edges and providing green addresses. So 6 meters setback in a green edge of Parramatta Road and 3 meters to Cheltenham and Lucas. And then to not only provide a buffer for us, but then also to provide, improve the quality and amenity of the streets in the locality, and also to really provide a catalyst for the entire neighborhood. Third thing was, given the size of the block, to provide a new laneway through the site, which you would have seen through the plans, that runs, almost creates a fourth street frontage to the site. That in the original scheme had some terraces that Andrew mentioned, which created as a transition zone between the existing houses and the podium and the towers, which are further towards Parramatta Road. Through consultation with council and the zone view panel, it was suggested that perhaps those be removed, as Andrew mentioned, added to the tower, make the tower skinnier and taller. And then as part of subsequent conversations, there was, okay, be mindful of future developments. And that's something that we have been mindful of, anticipating 4, 6, or 8 story developments. We run a number of different scenarios, making sure that setbacks are sufficient. So at the moment, we're about 24 meters from the podium to the southern boundary. Towers a lot greater. And going to the fourth principle was to strategically locate the height. And that is basically located in a position where it is further towards the north, towards Parramatta Road, two towers and not three. We looked at a number of different scenarios, and the purpose for two towers was that if they're separated enough, you're getting enough sunshine to come in within the site, but then also to the neighboring properties behind. So there was careful analysis of solar access to the open space that we're proposing, but then also to the properties to the south, regardless of if they pass today, they will pass into the future because they will be elevated. The fifth principle was just to protect that central open space, and given that it's the heart of the site, make sure that there's a buffer from Parramatta Road, and that was through inclusion of a four-story building to create a buffer, but then also activate Parramatta Road through a big box kind of opportunity. And then finally, the final piece was to introduce authentic fine grain uses along the ground floor that provides that activation, provides opportunities for the communities through what their needs might be, provides supervision and surveillance, and starts to kind of activate that central open space. So with those six underpinning principles, it drove our approach to how we developed the site. In terms of your question, in terms of impact to the neighbors, is that, or anticipation of what might be coming, we've looked at from a number of scenarios, whether it's 4, 6, or 8 stories, all those developments would be able to achieve compliance in terms of the floor spaces that they might be afforded, a central green spine through the middle of the block that runs north-south, and that would align with the open space that we've provided within the site as well. So there's an ability to green that whole entire block all the way as far as it goes. Location of the towers being as far away from that means that they can all achieve their solar access requirements and the like. Mm-hmm. Yes, the annual analysis was included in the pack that was issued as well. So we've done actually quite extensive testing, not just purely to the southern block, but in terms of taller towers and overshadowing to the wider neighbourhood, making sure that none of the open spaces, publicly open spaces of the parks, are going to be impacted at all. So it's not, we're not talking about a reduction of some solar. There's no impact between 9 and 3 in midwinter. I can't recall the name of the little park to the southeast. Prowse Reserve, there you go. It's been 2 years, excuse me, in terms of making sure there's absolutely no overshadowing of that at all in midwinter between 9 and 3. So we've taken it as far back a couple of blocks to make sure that it's all considered.
I think, Mr. Hoffman, to add to your specific question about what does the future look like to the south of our property, and those were the discussions that we did have with council planning team before the new team it was here, and it was about a green spine. It's recognised that those houses over a period of time, however long that will take, whether it's 5 years or 10 years, will eventually be knocked down and they will become four or, you know, six-storey apartments, etc. And through that discussion was a green spine down that whole entire block. That's why it's also part of the reasons why we opened up, I guess, our block for future openness to anything that develops behind us as well. So there's a green spine that could run all the way through.
Yeah. So the removal again. So the removal of the terraces.
Yeah. So again, this is all theoretical because you never know what the future holds and all that sort of stuff. But it's developed in such a way that it doesn't close itself off as to be an isolated project. It can be connected at the south side of the property, not just where you see it today as well.
Sorry for jumping around. Just for abundant clarity, in response to the design review panel commentary in August of 2023, an additional supplementary package to include that analysis of potential built form to the south and increases and a centralised open space running north-south at the rear of both of those properties that adjoin immediately to the south. That was all included in that analysis. So if the panel hasn't seen that or don't have that, that was provided. And the other part, just to mention, which I was going to get onto, was to essentially articulate that even in the announcements as of Friday last week with the low and mid-rise housing, which were touted about 12 months ago and considered, and their relationship to centres and transit-orientated development and stations, that context has been the thing that has informed the approach here. In many ways, including Burwood North, if you were to take the PR cuts and apply that in Burwood North, it would look very different to the Burwood North master plan. And that's essentially in direct response to infrastructure and also locations of suitable growth that doesn't then end up moving into other established suburbs and certainly conservation areas and other things like that. So that I guess evolving context of planning in response to infrastructure and housing need was central. But as Farhad said, I think it was grounded in the options analysis for what is the best outcome for the site. And I think if you look at any of the figures in the reporting and the boxes, the scale of this site within the precinct being Parramatta Road corridor and as it sits between any of the centres, as a single land holding without any need for amalgamation, that's accessible, that's sort of available for operation, that's not a bus depot and that doesn't require substantial amalgamation, which has its own challenges in this market and with the economy at the moment and pricing, which we know council faced and submissions came in as part of Burwood North in order to get that viability and feasibility considered, as well as the opportunities that that presents for community benefit and public open space to deliver an outcome that arguably feasibly can't be delivered anywhere else. That was the fundamental kind of approach that was taken here, as opposed to a single set of massing and plonking everything and trying to get the most out of it. So I know we sound like we're all saying the same things, but it's quite important to us that has been the fundamental approach. And that was steered and discussed with the design review panel and others. If I may just take just 1 minute, I won't go too much longer. I know I've been speaking a lot, but I didn't want to miss the point of the significance of the scale of the site informing the approach, because we're very mindful of that. And the fact that through that approach, as Andrew mentioned, it wasn't as though this consideration or the potential was posed and there was no feedback. There was continuous feedback with the design review panel that was formulated just after lodgement. And we had multiple meetings with them and also multiple meetings with staff through that process as well. So That's how we got to that point. But importantly, and I stress the point that the strategic planning context is evolving in this area. It's evolving in many parts of Sydney, but certainly in this area. And we need to be cognizant of that and take that view when we're looking at the potential on this site. There's no shying away from, and I think we'd be clear, there's no shying away from heights may present as being something that is a change, and certainly may present as something in terms of a hierarchy and relationships. I think height and density aren't necessarily directly correlated, particularly when you have a site of this scale. As Fahad mentioned, in many cases, the height of slender towers provides for a better amenity outcome on the adjoining residents, as well as allowing for increased amenity on the site for the occupants in the future, not just from the open space, but from other other aspects.
Look, at that, this juncture, can I invite the other panel members to ask questions? I know I've got more questions, but
absolutely,
I'm sure they have too.
Thank you for the time to thank talk you to this extent as well, sir.
Goodness, I'll have to go ahead with my other questions.
Please.
So now, understanding your concepts for the area to the south of the site, I had a particular situation recently where I, as you know, Cheltenham Road has a lights controlled intersection with Parramatta Road, and I turned into Cheltenham Road. I was more or less in a line of cars. Now, one of the cars ahead of me, probably five or six cars, decided it wanted to turn in and park in the Salvation Army car park, which, and to do that, they had to make a right turn. But of course, there was oncoming traffic in Cheltenham Road. And as you're no doubt aware, Cheltenham Road leads up to the high school, which is a very big school, and obviously at different times of the day, Cheltenham Road's very busy with parents dropping off kids. And that's apart from Cheltenham Road, in my view, being a shortcut to the back of the Burwood Shopping Centre. And so it's quite a well-used thoroughfare, and I guess that's why it's got traffic lights. Well, it immediately occurred to me that on your concept, you've got an in-and-out driveway ramp into the basement car parking, both in Cheltenham Road and in Lucas. And about where this driver stopped was about, well, almost where the big ramp would be down into the basement. And it immediately occurred to me, the cars behind me, because I was in a line of traffic, went back past the intersection and into Parramatta Road. So it immediately came to my mind, there's going to need to be a slip lane or a turn right lane in Cheltenham and probably in Lucas for cars to be able to do exactly what this driver wanted to do, but turn into the down ramp to the basement car park. Now, in your plans, I don't see any road widening for such a turning lane. And of course, this leads also to Parramatta Road itself, where even the traffic authority says, well, it's nice that you're going to have a 6 metre setback for landscaping to Parramatta Road, because we might want to resume that for Parramatta Road widening at some point. And it makes you aware of some of the constraints on your site, that it's going to probably have to give up some of the site for such things as that. It's very nice to have the 6 metre wide landscape section to Parramatta Road, but what immediately occurred to me is such a big centre would have a bus stop there, because it's also very convenient to have the lights, because it means people wanting to cross Parramatta Road already have pedestrian crossings there. So it makes sense that there would be a bus stop there, in which case you would need a bus turn-in bay, as well as your landscaping, as well as any road widening Parramatta Road might want. And then we've got the question I originally raised about Cheltenham and Lucas, about needing a turning bay in the, to enable traffic to turn into your big access ramps into the basement car parking. So what comments can you make about that?
If I may, I'll answer the second question first in terms of Parramatta Road and the 6 metre setback, and then perhaps to the parking. So within the PR cuts and the design guide that accompanies the PR cuts, the requirement for the 6 metre landscape setback, if you like, was cognizant of the future improvements that the state government were looking to do on Parramatta Road. In the front of this section of Parramatta Road, that included, if you like, the addition of a rapid bus way or a rapid bus line, including the area within that zone to allow for both the passing traffic, the bus to stop, bus stop as well, and a footpath before it hit the building alignment. So there's a section that's provided in the PR cuts strategy that shows how that would be configured within the existing road reserve, but required that 6 metre landscape setback within the front of any property that would be developing along that frontage to facilitate that function without the need for further encroachment into the site for, you know, indent bays and that sort of thing. So that was the starting point and the guiding point. I'll be a little bit conscious. I'm aware that there may be some other discussions of Transport for New South Wales in relation to that extent of the road and what is needed. And that may, that may have some impact on what that extent would look like, but nothing substantial. There's probably further information from the staff can provide the panel on that. In short, that would not change the fundamentals of the design and the configuration on Parramatta Road in order to achieve what was the vision of the state government for the bus transit. As we know, the evolving nature of those things, they could change, but that 6 metre landscape zone was to facilitate that as well as footpaths and other things in front of that. I might pass over to... Yep.
Let me just quickly talk about our traffic strategy. When we were looking at how to address traffic, given a site this size, important to note that currently as it stands is 8 or 10 crossovers on the three streets adjacent to this block, including what would have been a vehicle entry for the Mercedes showroom, the DA, which the client had prepared, and there was going to be access for cars off Lucas Road to that development.
And also access off Cheltenham. Also access off Cheltenham Road for truck delivery trucks and so forth.
So we've had DA approval for that. And again, looking at the, there's a number of crossovers that we need to address as well. In the proposal, what we tried to do was knowing that Parramatta Road would be very hard to kind of get in and out of, given what it is. Entry and exit is going to be via Lucas Road. Our approach was to push those driveway entries as far away from that intersection for the same purpose that you've just mentioned. Not only that, but at the time to sleeve that with terraces and townhouses that kind of, you know, that really conceal the boxes, which is the entry, the end exit of Lucas and Cheltenham Road. That approach allowed us, we working with the traffic engineer, we looked at a number of different scenarios, which way you might come in, which way you might go out, one way, two way. And I think that's something that through a detailed design process through DA, we can actually fine tune. But first move, push it away from Parramatta Road. We looked at in terms of Cheltenham Road, in terms of volume of traffic, what might be happening within that 3 meter setback and within the footpath that we've got. If there's an opportunity to, if there's a need or an opportunity to provide a slip lane, that could be considered as well without a detriment to the development. However, it was at the time noted that it wouldn't be necessary at the time. Again, once we go through a detailed design phase with that, we will be going to full study modeling and then to be able to kind of get that to be evolved. On the Lucas Road side, we had proposed a hotel and it had an inboard drop-off porte cochere to be able to make sure all those movements happen off the street and within the site as well. So knowing that we've got such a large site, in whatever format, in the current state as it is with the DA approval that was in place, it was always going to be driveways, but we tried to minimize that by pushing them as far away as possible, and then to be able to look at what other avenues there might be in terms of conversation around the signaling and widening of laneways and all that. That's a much greater conversation that in a detail phase we could go through. And I don't think that that would be a showstopper in trying to kind of get development across the line.
I think in addition to that as well is that that was certainly some concerns from the local residents when we did the engagement with them, especially around school time, school drop-off, because it is very busy. Like everywhere, when school drop-off happens, it's hectic. By having the entrance also off Lucas Road, though, so if any traffic is coming towards the west, so heading out of the city, anybody who might want to turn left into Cheltenham Road will soon find out that, you know, that's not ideal. It is much easier to go to Lucas Road, turn left and turn left, because there will be no hold-ups in that regard. So we are very aware of the turning right, which is the instance that you've seen, but our traffic studies on the volume of traffic and so forth don't show any worse outcome than or bigger impact than what we have with our DA that's already approved for an automotive showroom, which also had a workshop. So there would be cars at peak hour, which is drop-off time at 8 o'clock in the morning, which is school, and also pick up from 3 to 5 o'clock of cars. So there would have been a significant amount of traffic already there that was approved in the past.
Perhaps one last question. As you know, you're seeking council support to go to a gateway consideration. And what we've been discussing with your concept seems to resolve a number of concerns that the panel might have. And indeed, if you've read the staff reports, the staff have some concerns. One that occurred to me, at least, was given the state government's current legislation for bonus provisions, if, for instance, the rezoning took place on the basis of the floor space ratio, height limits and various other things, it's possible for whoever does the final development to look at taking advantage of some of the bonus provisions for affordable housing, which could then push the height of the towers up to closer to maybe 100 metres instead of what it's currently proposed. What do you say about the sort of problems that could create in the locality and on your site?
Look, I guess from our perspective is our buildings were originally lower. They then did get taller through the design review panel. To make buildings taller, it becomes very expensive for us, to be honest. There becomes a lot more engineering challenges, et cetera, with that. And to be honest, we're not seeking anything greater than what we're asking for at the moment. So,
can I add to that?
Yep, sure. Yep. I would just add, we are aware of challenges, including other councils seeking to essentially request that provision is turned off to remove that into the future. I think one of the fundamentals is that if a decision as a sort of, if you like, or a direction as explicit as a much lower building form, that then removes that the opportunity and the fundamentals of the approach that we were talking about and the outcomes on the site. That may lend itself to additional height above that, but as it relates to additional height above the current form that we would be proposing, that additional height in terms of its impacts and impacts on the ground plane would have, you know, negligible impact in that sense. But I'll pass over to Fahad.
Yeah. So Fahad, perhaps if you could talk about the impact of 30% above 10 stories and what it has on the neighbours.
No, well, I was about to get to that. So when we first looked at other comparative centres, the precedents talk to higher if you're looking at crow's nests and Leonard's roads and the like, and they may not all be appropriate precedents, but looking at, we were looking a lot higher. And what brought our heights down to 17 and 21 or thereabouts where we are at the moment was looking at impact on communities. Again, going back to LSH's vision, okay, we're providing for the community. We want a great achieve a particular outcome, and it's got to be feasible. So we run quite detailed solar access modeling in terms of both towers. And going back to Prowse Reserve, that was one key indicator. Okay, at what point do either one of the towers impact that? And that's where they got capped at 17 and 21 stories. And I think to be able to go taller, it will have that impact, which again was something that decided that, you know, it wouldn't meet the objective and the outcome. And to your question in terms of adding additional height, if you can remind me, sorry.
The current proposal from council of the 10 to 12 stories and about 30% to that. So if we were constrained by 10 stories,
So 30%. So if you go down that path of 10 to 12 stories, so we've done some analysis in a short time frame to see what 10 to 12 stories might do. We're looking at instead of two buildings, three buildings to be able to accommodate the same. We're looking at loss of central open space and buildings that creep closer to the southern boundary. So instead of being 24 meters from our boundary, as we are at the moment, there will be 12 meters. Although from an ADG point of view, it ticks all the boxes. From an impact and amenity to the neighbors, it is a lot worse. And especially in the current context of the next 5 or 10 years, when you've got single story and two story houses along that particular southern edge, we found that a higher podium has a greater impact than the height of the towers because the towers are quite far apart. The podium itself at four stories and we're like 24 meters or thereabouts away. It is at the limit of any higher than that. It would impact the solar access to those residences. But if that goes to street walls of eight stories or thereabouts and, you know, within 12 meters instead of 24 meters, it'll be much greater impact to the point where none of those properties to our site in their current state will be able to achieve their solar access requirements, let alone future potential developments.
And I guess one last comment as well is that because we're a property holder, we don't want to become the enemy of all of our neighbours. If we were to go higher than what's currently there by adding the 30%, that does a couple of things. One, that overshadows Prowse Reserve. Which is a public open space. We don't want to do that. I think that's a very bad, very bad outcome. And in fact, if we went even high, if we went to that height, we would also overshadow the houses in Rostherne Avenue, which are heritage. And I've met a number of those residents over time. And I think that's also a bad outcome because that is a beautiful, beautiful street. And we shouldn't have any. We shouldn't impact that in any way as well.
Well. My last comment would be that in the context of these controls being released, you know, some 12 months ago, the number of testing that we have done on sites where owners have come forward and would like to take advantage of those and they don't work because of those impacts and because of the fundamentals of the site, that lends itself to those controls appearing as though there may be something that's a concern, but just fundamentally don't work on the site. I think here, and it is a fair point, that certainly local government and community are concerned about something that may happen in the future. I think the fundamentals would still need to be tested for that to occur. And so what we're suggesting is it wouldn't be predicated on that being there and then going again to add 30% on top, with some of those key fundamentals, as Andrew said, to impacts to areas that are well beyond what have been considered in this assessment. So certainly understand the concern, but I think when that point was to come, if somebody was to lodge that, which isn't the current intention, that same impact assessment would occur and there'd probably be some barriers at that point as well.
Any more questions from panel members? No? You do?
Yes. Yep. Thank you, Chair. We have kind of touched on it already, but in relation to the southern part of the area, we've got two very large driveways that would be leading down to the basement levels. What kind of consideration did you give to how that might impact on the surrounding amenity of the surrounding properties? And could you consider or did you conceive any other alternatives, perhaps integrating it into the built form Yes, I can see lots of nodding. Can you just talk us through what you're thinking?
Am I just running through our strategy? Yes, yeah. Definitely. And also, this was one of probably the main topic of conversation with the design review panel to look at what other alternate strategies we've taken, kind of undertaken in the past. The two driveway entries from Lucas and Cheltenham, they're set back about 3 meters from the boundary with a green buffer along that edge. One part of the strategy was that this trucks is looking at more the larger vehicles. So when you've got trucks and deliveries, how you deal with that, because that's more likely to have a greater impact in terms of any street or neighborhood in terms of turning. With those trucks, we didn't want to have any turning happening through that our laneway or through above ground. So come in, get in, dive down, do the business, come out, turn left and get out. That was the first strategy. In terms of impact to the neighbors, sleeving may not be the right term, but basically we had terraces that basically incorporated the form within the terraces and then with terraces or some residents above to be able to then become two ugly boxes that are basically for a driveway. It's integrated in a way within the building, but not within the podiums and towers. We did look at what happens, a number of scenarios. What happens if you go from Lucas or Cheltenham, go straight into the building and dive down? The key challenges with that is predominantly engineering and a great fall through the site. So we're falling significantly from Lucas to Cheltenham, and any large vehicles that dive down, the best spot for them would be where the gradient from one street to the other is the easiest to be able to traverse. Entering directly, turning into from Lucas Cheltenham into the buildings and turning down, that would have a significant impact in terms of turning circles, structure, lifting and the like in terms of those buildings, but it also disseminate any uses we might have on the ground plane. So in terms of, you can imagine the turning circle of a truck going through, instead of having active uses and lobbies, you'd be having a big car park entry or driveway on both sides, yeah, so on an entry and exit. And also the length of that driveway to be able to dive down will pretty much cut through the building and potentially a little bit into the open space as well. So it was becoming quite a divisive barrier to be able to achieve the activated ground plane that we wanted to achieve and to be able to accommodate the kind of uses that we've proposed along the ground plane. Working with the design review panel, they asked us to go and test a number of strategies. We even looked at coming in through the laneway, then turning left into the one of the buildings. And scenario like that can work, but again, it's got to be in a detailed design kind of phase to really work with the right engineers to be able to make that work. The key impact of that is as cars are coming out, so they're coming out of the southern end of the two, either one of the podiums, coming up, headlights and noise and impact to those residents that we're talking about. Now that we've removed the terraces at the request of the design review panel, that would have a much greater impact to those residents than turning straight from the street. We looked at a number of scenarios in how, in terms of those dive down kind of entries and exits, how you might green them, how you might screen them further than what the entry box may need to be. And that's something that in a detailed design phase, we need to kind of develop a lot further. But the impact to those residents would be a lot greater if on exit, if they're coming out, headlights and the like, and the noise. And a lot of that's happening through the laneway, through open space, where that noise is kind of brought into the site and it impacts those neighbors.
If I can just add, I guess that's the technical sort of side of it as well, but from a developer's perspective, anything on Parramatta Road is really harsh. Yeah, and there's a lot of noise that transfers from it, etc. You would have walked it today. You will see it. There's trucks. Traffic is a lot less now that you've got the tunnel and all that sort of stuff, but it is very harsh. Thus the reason why we have that podium at the front to block that. One of the things that, as a, you know, representing the owner here, is what we wanted to do is we wanted to make that space as enjoyable as possible. And that means removing all of the dirty stuff, the trucks, the pickup of the rubbish, all of that sort of stuff. You know, that's dangerous for kids playing and all those considerations. So we wanted to try and create as quiet a nice place as possible. And to do that means we have to put everything downstairs. That's expensive to do, but it's a much better outcome. And if we can do that, that's a much better outcome for the residents who are there, which makes it a better development for us because we've got more interest in it. And you know, we have residents there that are happier, and also the locals as well want to visit it. No one will want to go and visit an open space if the delivery truck's picking up the rubbish at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and all that sort of stuff, especially from food and beverage outlets.
I just maybe add one more point in terms of safety. In a scenario where vehicles, regardless of what type, are turning into that laneway that we've proposed and then turning again to go into the podium, what that would do is it would, from a safety point of view, compromise, I guess, the walkability or the quality of that laneway. We'd envision that as a pedestrian priority share zone, so low speed limit, short-term or disabled drop-off opportunities. And then having turning circles of trucks coming in and turning around through there, it just meant that it took away from that quality that we were trying to aspire to. Not only that, it would also take away opportunities for trees and landscaping. So we've done scenarios where if you were to do that, it knocks out about 40% of potential trees you might have along that laneway. So a number of those which we had sketched, we had discussed with the Zone Review Panel and we had shared, we've been through that process.
One more question.
Yes, just quickly. The issue with the townhouses, when we were on site, we were actually thinking it looks like there should be townhouses on the southern end of the site to provide that integration into the residential zone. And you've made it very clear it was a design review panel that asked you to remove them. I don't understand why. You don't.
From recollection, it was to open up the back of the area for this green spine for whatever will be developed into the future. I personally loved the. I'm trying to think the one that we modelled it off in Randwick.
Yes. The CBUS site.
Anyway, a good idea is always one of your copies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's where we got it from, because it gives it and that takes height away as well, which is good. New market.
That's right. It takes the height away. I just wonder if the green spine potentially could come through as some kind of green link.
At the time, the planning team and the director at the time of planning, Dylan Porter, wanted more green space. I think one of the comments he made about green space is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Burwood has the smallest amount of square meterage per person of green space in all of Sydney, or maybe it's all of Australia. I don't know. Was it all of Sydney? So all of Sydney. So they were desperate for green space. So we said, well, if that's what you want, then we can accommodate it. But we're happy to go back the other way.
Can I just add to that? One of our very first approach to looking at creating a structured master plan for the site was, if we've got this beautiful central open space, we've got the laneway, do we want to be looking back at a, you know, 6-foot paling fence of the residents? Do we want to be impacting those residents with activity in street lights and movements? And, you know, you've got a cafe or something like that. The best approach to that was to create a buffer to them of a similar scale. And that also provides activation. It provides diversity in housing and housing choice, which is really great. And it more than anything, it introduces fine grain. So one of the things about doing a larger development is that, look, you can drop big boxes, but where it is within your cone of vision in the first 2 or 3 or 4 stories to really introduce that fine grain. And then that also comes through materiality and looking at the materiality of the area and the brick and the like. And that started to kind of, you know, create a picture that, look, this could be something quite special. However, through conversations with council, I think predominantly from my recollection, it was that opportunity of the development potential of the site next door, and that they could also have an interface to this precinct.
So is that something that, if I don't know, council officers think about it, because I don't think we've really discussed it, but is it something that could be perhaps brought back onto the agenda for your future stages of this development, or is that something that's
if there was support for it, absolutely we would look at it. It was taken away, I guess, before the current planning team were here. So I'm not sure what their view on it is, but yes, we would be happy to put it back on,
because a lot of those houses that are along particularly Lucas Road are actually quite new, and they're newly built, so I wouldn't imagine that those houses are going to be knocked down and replaced.
It's generational for that to change.
Yeah, that change will happen, definitely, but will it happen in the next 5 years? Unlikely. Anyway, that's something that... Thank you for explaining that. That's very important.
Just add to that, because I'm quite attached to the townhouses. We looked at a number of pieces. So we looked at Newmarket in Randwick. We looked at Harold Park in Glebe, which I had worked on for some time ago. And one thing that on a site like this that's important to get right, especially if you're looking to the next 20, 50, or 100 years, is to diversity of uses, a proper mixed use. Now, we're getting that through hotel, through apartments, through F&B, commercial spaces and the like, but the diversity in housing choice is actually quite important. Now, we've got one tower component that's got apartments. That's apartments, which is great, but it'd be great to introduce a different form of housing typology, which is the kind of missing middle to be able to say, like, we can actually accommodate more. There's more choices for different people. It also goes a long way in providing a buffer to the neighbors, as I mentioned, but then also contributes to the character of area, but not just doing larger development, but also having fine grain to it.
Thank you. Well, look, I think we've had a long round of discussion about the application. I think if there's no more urgent questions, we can commit that matter to our private session at the end of this public.
If I may, Chair, just one more paragraph.
Mr. Gash.
Yeah, thank you.
Your last word.
Yes, much appreciated. But it goes very much to that point. And I think in the supplementary submission we sent to the panel, really the two key requests coming out of today in short is it's been a 4-year process and it's certainly a 2-year lodgement process in the context of everything and the scale of the site and the nature of it, progressing to the gateway as soon as possible without further analysis at this point is fundamental in our view, but it doesn't remove the ability for that analysis to continue with additional stakeholders at the table, including the state government. So from our point of view, that would be, if you like, the request of the panel to recognise that and ensure that any recommendation doesn't slow down that ability to move forward. And I think the second part to the commentary earlier is we're certainly not coming in thinking that there is no room for refinement or consideration of things. There will be the formal consultation, there'll be other things. It's probably the concern around the explicit nature of some of the recommendations that drive an outcome, which we've spent an hour talking about, we don't think is optimal, but also to still allow for the fundamental principles and the concerns of residents and other key things that need to be considered to be worked through and to maintain that ability to revise those and have that discussion post-gateway.
Mm-hmm.
Not a free ride of no recommendations or no conditions, but certainly to allow that conversation to continue in recognition of everything we've spoken about and the suite of information. So thank you for your time. We very much appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you for your attendance.
Thank you.
I'll close item GB1/25, subject to our final decision in our confidential section. I can reopen, I'm sorry, DA1/25 now, which is the 60 Burwood Road, Burwood use of the rooftop of an existing hotel development as a licensed premises. Now, do we have the people who are going to be in attendance now? Thank you. I take it we've still got Sam, are you?
Yes, I'm here.
And have we got Michael A at all?
Yes.
We do. And do we have Musa Zayul?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Okay. Thank you. I might reiterate that the panel inspected the site this afternoon. We've read all of the reports, including very extensive documents of various objections that have been raised up to 2 years ago in conjunction with the operation of the rooftop sky lounge. So including the police reports on activities that the police have been called to the premises for. So we've got the speakers, two of them, Musa Zayour and Michael A, wish to speak for the recommendation, and Sam Ayu is attending simply to watch. Who shall we hear from first?
I'm happy to start.
Mr. Zayour?
Yeah.
Ah, there you are.
Hi.
Good, we can see you, Mr. Zayour. That's good. Can't see the others. All right.
Okay.
What would you like to say?
Okay, my name is Musa Zayour. Okay, I've been a member, okay, and
could
doing
you speak
acoustic...
into your microphone, please?
Okay, sorry. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Okay. My name is Musa Zayour. Okay. I am an acoustic engineer. I am a member of the Australian Acoustical Society. I've been a member since 2008. Okay. I've been involved in very similar projects. The last I can recall is the Petersham RSL Club, okay, which is like not far away from you guys, and it can cater. This club can cater for 500, basically inside the club. The Ashfield Polish Club, okay, this one it has got a capacity of 370 inside the club at any time, whether standing or being seated. And our last project is the Viking Club. Okay, at Jerem Bombera, and this club can accommodate for 1,320 patrons. Okay. Regarding the number 60 Bearwood Road, okay, we understand the complaints we've got from the neighbors. Okay, I've attended to the site a few times. Okay. The first time we've attended to the site was on October 17, 2022. At that time, what we did, okay, is we installed two noise loggers. The first noise logger, we installed it at the club, inside the club, 1 meter away from the speakers, okay? And that noise logger went on for a week from October 17, okay? Till October 23rd or 24th, okay? Concurrently, we had another noise logger just at the first residential receiver, which is unit 305, number 351 Bearwood Road. The reason we've done this is to understand what's going on, okay? And we started, okay, after getting both noise loggers to the office and analyzing the data, okay, we started understanding why these neighbors are complaining, okay? So we had a certain recommendations, okay? Then again, we prepared another noise report, okay? That was on February 14th with the noise readings. From February 14, 2024 till February 20, 2024. While doing this report, what we've done, we carried noise readings away from the club. The reason we've carried the noise readings away from the club is to ensure that these noise readings, okay, will not have and will not be affected by any noise from the club. The reason we've carried those noise readings is to basically establish the background noise levels, okay, that's in the area without the club operating, okay? Then what we did, we've got basically the planner, and he says we expect around 150, 160 people inside the club, okay? What we did, we carried a noise model, okay, for the noise inside the club And this noise model, what it has got? It has got live music. It has got people basically talking or singing or whatever, okay? And that noise model, which we presented in our report on page 12, okay? It gave us, okay, the noise contours in the area. And based on that, we have inside this report a certain number of recommendations by which if these recommendations are met and followed, okay, people will not, basically the noise level from the club will not, will comply with the regulations. What are the regulations? For noise from the club, we have two regulations. The first one is background plus 5, okay, which is just the normal background noise level plus 5 decibel. And remember, the background noise level is not whatever noise level we have now. It is the 90th percentile. So basically, as you know, noise varies from time to time. So basically what we do, okay, we account for the least 90% of the noise and we average it, okay? So basically we exclude whatever the other side of the noise levels, okay? So basically I'll give you an example. If you have an L equivalent, which is the same energy of noise among a certain time of 50, okay? The background noise level might be 43 or 42 or 40. The reason is, when we talk about background noise levels, okay, we omit all the noise data that's within the highest 90 percentile, okay? And we keep the other 10%, which is the lowest noise levels, okay? So what we did, we did the noise modeling, okay? And we created the contours and we said, okay, that's what has to happen. While doing that, okay, actually myself, I went and knocked doors, okay, and asked what's basically the main concern, okay, and what's the main issue. We had two main issues. The first main issue is noise coming from the club itself, okay, which is either from music or from people. And the second noise issue is after people leaving the club, okay, they are basically congregating around the club, okay? So these are the two noise problems we've got, okay? Regarding the first one, okay, which is noise from the club, okay? As you know, if you have one person screaming, suppose we don't have a club, we've got one person screaming at level 11 on that building with a very high voice, okay? For sure, everybody around in the area will be complaining. And it's only one person is screaming, okay? So basically, the main problem is not the club itself, but it is the amount of noise emanating and produced by the club, okay? Whether this club can accommodate 10, 20, 50, 100, doesn't matter. It's the amount, it's all related to the amount of noise, okay, emanating from the club. That's why in our, okay, modeling, okay, we established a sound power level of 82, okay, that will, so basically was, which is a sound modeling with our, we established in accordance with our sound modeling that there should be a noise limiter, okay, that limits the music from the club to 82. Okay, now, when we installed the noise loggers inside the club, the noise levels inside the club were much higher than 82, okay? So for the club to comply, okay, we established this noise level, which is 82, and we said noise limit, and like these noise limiters, okay, they are not something out of the ordinary, and you will see they are fitted at every club, okay? So this is the main thing to make sure that this club complies, okay, is by applying and introducing a noise limiter, okay? What's a noise limiter? It's just an electronic stuff that's hooked next to the speakers, and this and so it is in the lounge, okay, and it is hooked to the system. So what happens, okay, the minute you've got two options. The minute the noise levels gets above 82, the whole speakers cuts off, or it reduce some, they reduce the noise to 82. So that's the most important thing to be installed at the lounge. The second one is to ensure that people are not congregating, okay, at the entrance of the club while leaving, okay? So basically, if people are congregating at the entrance of the club, again, okay, they'll be screaming, they'll be shouting. And I could, and you could see from councils, from the neighbors' concern, that these are the most two issues that they are raising against the operation of the club. So two things, a noise logger will be installed, a noise limiter will be installed, okay, on the speakers. And the second one is to for us to ensure, for the operator of the club, to ensure that people don't congregate at the base or next to the entrance of the club.
Thanks, Mr. Zayor. Can I ask a question, please?
Yes.
when have you installed noise level controls already?
That was in our recommendation, okay? And our recommendation was given basically in our report dated February 2024.
So since then,
we haven't
please?
Been to the club. No, we haven't been to the club since then.
When did you install them?
I wasn't. This was our recommendation. Remember, we are only the acoustic consultant.
So you haven't installed them yet?
I'm not sure whether the operators of the club installed that or not.
Well,
again, we haven't visited the club since October 2020, since February 2024.
All right. Can I just ask a question a little further?
Yeah.
There's letters here before us from nearby neighbours, November 2024.
Yeah.
Where they understood that there were noise control levels on the amplified music already installed.
Have they? Okay. First of all, we have to ensure that they are installed. We have to ensure
Sorry to interject.
Can I just interrupt? I'm sorry. Can you tell me the answer to my question? Were there noise control level meters installed in November 2024?
I haven't been to the club, okay, since February 2024.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. To confirm the chair's question, we have already installed the noise limiters.
Okay.
I don't understand. Who interrupted then?
Me, Sam.
Sam?
Yes.
Sam, what is your connection to this proposal? Are you a resident objector or what?
No, I'm for the project.
You are what?
I'm for the project.
I'm sorry. Be clearer.
I'm working for the company, for the lounge. Applicant.
Can anybody understand what he's saying?
He's a representative of the applicant.
You're a representative of the applicant. All right. And what did you say in regard to the noise controllers on the amplifiers?
So I was just trying to confirm to you that we've already installed the noise limiters.
Were they there in November 2024?
Yes, they were.
Well, now I've got two letters at least complaining that at 11:55 p.m. on a Saturday night, these people could hear the bar's projected music in their bedroom, even with them wearing earplugs. So if the noise controllers were installed, they're either non-existent or they've never been switched on. What have you got to say to that?
We'll have to refer this matter to the operations because we weren't across this fully.
All right, so you know nothing about whether or not they were switched on or not?
Well, we were informed that they were installed and switched on. But going back to your question, we will have to refer the exact dates to
I will have time. To hear what?
We on the applicant, as part of the applicant, will have to refer the matter to the operations side of operations team.
All right, so you can't really help us on that. Okay. Know whether the operation of the noise controllers was switched on or not?
No, because the last time I visited the club was on February 14, 2024. Okay.
Okay, thank you. All right.
When these noise limiters are usually installed, okay, they are usually installed with a certificate and they are usually kept in a locked place, okay, so that no person can tamper with them. That's usually the case.
All right. So you don't know if that sort of security has been applied in this situation?
Not really, no.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions from the panel members?
Thank you, Chair. Just a very quick one for our acoustic engineer.
Yeah.
Did you consider any sort of enhancement to the physical barriers, for example, the glass balustrade or anything? Could there be any sort of installation of additional acoustic physical barriers that might assist in this situation, or is it not something that would be either feasible or would make a significant difference to the way in which the sound moves through the air?
Can you see the existing barrier now is a 1.8 meter high barrier, okay, with the noise limiters in place, okay, as per our model, okay. Basically the lounge should not be emanating any noise above the background noise level plus 5. If we raise the noise barrier or whatever is there to 2.1, okay, or 2.3, it will not have, okay, higher effects. The reason is the building itself, we are talking about a building on the 11th floor or on the 12th floor, okay? Neighboring buildings are already lower than the club, okay? So raising this noise barrier will only act it will have a major effects only if the buildings next to the club are at the same level of the club or they are higher.
Thank you, that's very interesting, thanks.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Zayor and Sam O. Now, Michael A, we haven't heard from you. Is Michael A there or has he left the meeting? He's left. Okay. Michael A has left the meeting. And so that concludes the public section of tonight's meeting. I think unless there's any objection from the panel members, I'd adjourn to our private session from now on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could cease. Thank you, Mr. Zayor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.